This is an ABC podcast.
Good morning and welcome to the Friday Sporting Edition of Pacific Beat, coming to you from the lands of the Bunurong and Wurundjeri peoples of the Kulin Nation. I'm Richard Ewart, and coming up as Fijian and Drua aim for a hat-trick of Super Rugby Grand Finals wins, the coach who was sacked by the FIU after last year's victory still doesn't know what he did wrong.
That's what I'm trying to get from them. They have never get back to me, and I'm still waiting for them to get their full explanation for what they have done.
First, it was Ace who made it from PNG to the Gold Coast Suns in the AFL, and now his nephew is on the same pathway.
When they wake up in the morning, they wanted to hold the AFL ball. They wanted to become like Ace. They want to do those small styles and speckies and whatnot that Ace does. Morning till night, they'll be playing, trying to be like Ace.
And what now for junior soccer in PNG after that OFC under-16 qualifying disaster?
I've yet to see anyone really roll out any real programs for under-16s or age group level soccer, youth level soccer anywhere in the country.
More from former Capels captain Alvin Komolong on his concerns about junior pathways in PNG later in the program. Going to start, though, with some sporting history for Vanuatu's women cricketers in their opening match of the T20 World Cup qualifying tournament in Abu Dhabi. Vanuatu, an associate member nation of the International Cricket Council, ranked 30th in the world, have taken on full member Zimbabwe, ranked 12th in the world, and beaten them by 6 wickets. Batting first, Zimbabwe were bowled out for 61 inside 14 overs, and Vanuatu reached their target with just 4 wickets down and 3.5 overs to spare. Star of the show was Nasimana Navaika, who took 4 for 13 and top scored with 21. The team have just got back to their hotel, where no doubt the celebrations are continuing. I'm pleased to say we can cross live to Vanuatu's victorious captain, Selina Solomon. Selina, welcome to Pacific Beat. Many congratulations. This is a great day for you and the team.
Hello, and yes, thank you so much for having me in the show.
So what was it like? I mean, you were going into a team, as I say, ranked 18 places above you, but you had a practice match against Sri Lanka, who ranked even higher the other day. You didn't win that game, but I think maybe what you learnt from that game has helped you towards this result tonight.
Yes, I was just, you know, talking to a couple of people, and I was telling them that, you know, it was really good for us to have, those 2 practice matches against Uganda and Sri Lanka. It helped us a lot because, you know, half of our team is in Australia and then half are back home. So playing those 2 teams, and especially Sri Lanka, gave the girls so much, you know, confidence going into our actual competition. So, yeah, I think the 2 warm-up games helped us.
You claimed 6 wickets for 9 runs to knock them over pretty quickly in the end.
Yeah, but, you know, I'm very proud of the girls, and how everyone was very helpful during the game, even though we got smashed a bit in the first few overs, and everyone just came back and then bowled the way we wanted the ball to go. So, yeah, I'm very proud of the girls.
And as far as the batting is concerned, I mean, to win the match with 6 wickets standing, it seems to me that you had a plan that when you went out there, and largely it seems to work pretty smoothly.
Yeah, you know, our plan is just simple, you know, just go and look for, if they bowl a good ball, respect the good ball and just look for singles, don't overhit the ball. And I think, you know, a few years back we were struggling to do that, but I think the girls are getting to understand the game more and, you know, trying to follow the plans. I mean, we're not perfect, but I think we're getting there.
And of course, there's been a lot of talk about your own performances in recent times and the performances of Rachel Andrew, who opened the batting there this evening, also took a wicket, I noticed. But star of the show was Nasimana Navaika, 4 wickets, 21 runs, top scoring. Tell me a little bit about her. Was this her best ever game?
You know, she's very, she's a player with a few words. Like, she's a very humble player. I think our game with Uganda, she bowled and she wasn't happy with, her bowling. But then we played with Sri Lanka and then she bowled. And then today again, she came back and She was very, you know, she played the role that, you know, we wanted someone in our top four batter to do. So she bowled the way she bowled, and then she bat. And I'm very, you know, very happy and proud of her, because she's that player that, you know, you can always rely on when you need someone to stay there out there for long. So, yeah, I'm very proud of her, because she's a very shy player.
And the result is obviously a morale booster for the team, but it doesn't stop there, does it? I mean, you've got three tough matches to go. You've got the Netherlands next, who are ranked 15, Ireland, who are ranked 10, and the host UAE, who are ranked 16. So all three teams that you play are ranked above you, but you've now proved that maybe that doesn't matter.
Yeah, you know, like, I was telling the girls that, you know, regardless of winning or losing, we are here to enjoy the game. And that is one of our, you know, main priorities, to learn as much as we can. And, you know, hopefully to help the girls back home. Winning is a bonus. And, you know, having to go out there and do just that, you know, enjoying the game and getting the win out of it. You know, and if, you know, if we can win this, you know, I don't know what's, you know, stopping us to win another one. But, you know, at the end of the day, we just need to follow our plans and, you know, go there and give 110%.
And one thing I should mention, I mean, I'm presuming this game was played under lights. Was that a first for your team?
Yes, that's one of the, you know, the things that we are very proud of, because this is the first time, yes, the girls played under the lights. We were like, oh, Ru, how are we going to do this? But, you know, I'm happy for the outcomes, and I'm happy that, you know, we just somehow we managed to get out of it and get a win out of it. So, yeah, I'm very proud. Yeah, so this was the first time the girls, our team, ever played under lights.
So what happens next? Maybe a little bit more celebrating, and you get the day off tomorrow, I think, in the Netherlands on Sunday.
I was expecting the girls to celebrate more, but I think everyone is just happy, and, you know, they were focused, and everyone's just tired and they want to go to bed. So, and everyone is just already up in their rooms getting ready to go to bed and, you know, have a sleep in tomorrow, and then look forward for Netherlands after tomorrow.
Well, Selena, many congratulations to you and your team. Fantastic performance first up, and we look forward to the matches to come, Netherlands, Ireland and UAE. They must all be looking at you now, a little nervously, perhaps.
I'm not sure, but yeah, thank you so much. You know, thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. It's great to have you on the show. Enjoy the success, and we look forward to more later in the week. Selena Solomon there joining us live from Abu Dhabi, where it's, about 12:15 over there. First time they've ever played under lights. Half the team were picking fruit and quite recently, and they've got out and knocked off Zimbabwe, who are ranked 18 places above them on the world rankings. An extraordinary achievement by the Vanuatu team. Look out, Netherlands, Ireland, UAE. They must be looking at Vanuatu now and thinking, these guys are not quite as easy as we thought they were going to be.
Disasters are inevitable, but losing your life or home isn't. Learn what to do before, during, and after disaster in a program aimed at helping you keep safe. Pacific Prepared is all things disaster preparedness for the Pacific, with a team of reporters on the ground, having conversations and bringing you the stories that could help you, your family, and community prepare for natural disasters. Pacific Prepared, Fridays from 9 a.m. PNG time on ABC Radio Australia.
You're with Pacific Beats on ABC Radio Australia for a Friday morning. And the Super Rugby Women competition reaches its climax on Sunday, with Fijiana Ndrua looking to defy the odds again and making three grand final wins in a row, just as they did against the Reds last year. Fijiana will start as underdogs. This year's final is a repeat of the 2022 affair, when the Ndrua, having previously ended the Waratahs' long unbeaten run, beat them again by 32 points to 26 in the decider. But when the two sides met in round two this season, the New South Wales team hammered the Ndrua 62-21. And after a big slip-up against the Melbourne Rebels, the Ndrua secured their spot in the final with a win over Western Force in front of a wildly enthusiastic crowd in Suva.
Advantage is being played. Can they get it right to the speechless? There's Buna with the fan. She is over.
It's a totally new team, so I believe in the girls. Some of us, this is their first final. So please keep cheering for the girls. We're going to take it to the final and try to win this final again.
You can hear the passion in the voice of Drua captain Kareleni Naisewa ahead of Sunday's big game. And coach Moses Rauluni says despite the heavy loss to New South Wales earlier in the season, he knows only too well the form book can be turned on its head in a one-off final.
That day we were way off the mark, and I think they've developed really well, and New South Wales has been the benchmark team for the whole competition, and everyone's felt their wrath. Grand final, a different story. You know, I coached the Queensland Reds last year, and we were the form team the whole season, and the Fijian Drua girls, they weren't playing well at all like that year, and then come grand final, they beat us. So it's whoever turns up. You've got to be on song for the 80 minutes. If you're not, there's no second chances.
So what will it take to beat the Waratahs? The coach has a plan, but he's not giving much away.
We've got some strategies in place, and I probably won't say it here for now. But the New South Wales, they're very sharp in their attack and a very fit side. And like Fijiana, they like to run the ball. Their skill set has been outstanding this year. I've been watching a lot of their games. They really function well as a group. A big thing for us, we have to get our set piece right, cut down our mistakes and penalties. Any opportunities you give New South Wales is going to cost us. So not giving them any space, not giving them any yards, and not giving away silly penalties.
Pick and go. Desperate defence required by the Western Force. Who wants
use it? Hands up, hands up.
And Akora Barner's going to back herself. And there she goes. And it's a try. A try to the Fijian Drua right on the stroke of half time. The crowd, wow, they love it.
In the build up to the final, the Drua players have been out and about in Nandi and they visited a community home. Moses Rauluni says it was a humbling experience for all, particularly the realisation that rugby has the power to inspire and raise morale.
The girls realise, you know, how much they've got compared to people around Fiji, and there's a lot of people in need in Fiji, and, you know, rugby gives them hope, and winning is a good thing, or playing well. The girls, the way they played last weekend, gave a lot of encouragement to these sort of people.
And regardless of the result on Sunday, the coach says the team are growing as a professional outfit.
With the coaching staff we've got, we've done a great job, you know, with a short preseason coming together late. I think the girls have got to be commended for their work rate and their effort. We've put a lot on them, and we had a lot of injuries at the start of the season. And for them to come back and be playing their third grand final, it's a credit to them and the hard work they put in, and they're recovering from injury. We can't live like amateurs anymore. And one of the big things is recovery and rehab. The big thing is to change habits, which they'll learn over the next year or two.
Straight through. Let the crowd tell the story yet again. Bullet Buddha. And the Drua go to another grand final.
Atelaita Buna's third try and the Drua's sealer from the semi-final. Mick Byrne, coach of the men's Drua team, was impressed and he's very confident about the Fijiana's prospect come Sunday.
They were awesome last week, and certainly on behalf of the Drua men, our prayers and also our best wishes go with them, and we're really looking forward to them bringing back the trophy.
Men's and Drua coach Mick Byrne ending that report from Evan Wasuka and sending the team's well wishes to Fijiana ahead of Sunday's grand final showdown against the Waratahs. Three in a row. What an achievement that would be. And surely it's time now to extend the women's Super Rugby competition so they play a full home and away season. And after their performances in pre-season, surely Pinina Pacifica have to be included much sooner than is the plan at the moment. That will be another huge boost for women's rugby in the region. Now, one person who will be watching Fijiana in that grand final with considerable interest is the man who led them to victory last season, former coach Inoko Male. He's now working in men's college rugby in the United States and with some success. The man who replaced him as head coach of both Fijiana Undrua and the national team, Mosesi Rauluni, has said more than once that Marley's were big shoes to fill. So why did the FIU feel the need to fill them? When I spoke to Inoko Male in California, he was still just as mystified as everybody else about his dismissal.
I think it's fair to say that you left Fiji not exactly under a cloud, but under strange circumstances. One minute you were coach of Fijiana and Drua, and the next minute you weren't, and nobody seemed to know what had happened.
Yes, to me it's up to the Fiji rugby for my termination. Eh? I don't know what happened to them. That's what they've given me, so I just left.
So you were never given an explanation?
Yeah, they didn't give me any explanation for why I was terminated. They just gave me a termination letter, that's all. And it's very difficult.
It must have been extraordinarily hard for you to take under those circumstances, because what more can you do than win a grand final?
That's all.
And you took the national side to the new W15 competition, and they acquitted themselves extremely well. And it was looking like everything was heading in the right direction.
Yeah, lots of the people knew that for the women's just been 2 years old playing in the high competition. It's not an easy task. Eh? So for us as coaches, we have to build our team for 2 or 3 years, then we can have a good team that compete in that kind of environment. Eh?
So tell me, were you angry when this happened?
Surely, I'm disappointed. Eh? I'm really disappointed for what they have done.
And the fact that you're now in the United States, what does that say about your reaction to that decision? Did you feel that you needed to get out of Fiji, or was it just a case that this was the best job opportunity that came along?
Little bit of both. Little bit of both. Yeah.
So do you see your future now on the coaching front being in the United States for the foreseeable future at least?
Yeah, I find it better trying to cope with what's going on in the U.S. But it's a new environment. I'm trying to get used to it. We just finished our season with American River College. I'm assisting our coach, Josh, when I came in. So this is the first time that this team is playing rugby here in the U.S. It's a college team. We played 5 games and we win the 5 games and we lost in the final of the Western region.
And how does that competition fit into the rugby structure in the U.S.? I mean, are we talking about the top college competition here, or are you working your way up?
Yeah, this is a top college competition in the U.S.
And where do the players come from? Are there any players in your team with the Pacific heritage at all?
Yeah, some of them are from Fiji, some from Samoa, some from Tonga, and one from the Red Indians. Few are from the U.S. as well as other parts of the world that come to study in this American college.
So would you see the prospect, therefore, that some of these players might find their way into the Ndrua team at some stage in Moana Pacifica?
Yeah, I think that's a good thing for them. But I don't know whether the coaching staff and the management from the Fijiana and the Moana like these people to come. But lots of good players are here, and they are improving. And the rugby in U.S. is building, and it's growing now.
And have you been keeping half an eye on Fijiana back in the Pacific in another grand final? What do you make of that?
Yes, all of those girls were with me here last year. I know that they will perform this year. Those are the girls that I developed last year. Buna, the one that's now in the limelight, that took midway through the competition last year, and she's shining now.
So can you see a situation similar to that of last year when you were in charge and they took on the Reds and they were not favourites and yet they won the grand final? It's a similar situation this year against the Waratahs.
It's going to be a hard task for them, especially when they lost at home. They have to dig deep now, and I'm giving my blessing to them that they will actually do their best.
And as far as your own situation is concerned and what happened that led to you leaving Fijiana and Ndrua, I mean, have you drawn a line under that now, or would you still like to get some sort of explanation from whoever it is that is running rugby in Fiji as to why that happened?
Yes, that's what I'm trying to get from them. They have never get back to me, and I'm still waiting for them to get their full explanation for what they have done.
Seemed like a reasonable request. Inoki Male on the line from California. Still in the dark, though, about why he was dismissed as coach of Fijiana. Incidentally, I also asked Inoki if he had applied for the coaching job with the men's team with the Flying Fijians. You won't be too surprised to learn that he said no, he hadn't, because, frankly, he thought there was no point, bearing in mind the circumstances of his departure. Now, 24 hours before the women's grand final, there will be a showdown in Suva between the men's Ndrua team and their Pacific rivals, Moana Pacifica. As things stand, both sides are in finals contention. Ndrua coach Mick Burns says he's been impressed with Moana's progress this season.
It's like us, our third year. You know, our players are understanding a little bit more about professionalism. Their diets and habits have improved. Their conditioning's improved. They've got their third year of training in the gym and got bigger and stronger, and all those aspects of improvement, and you can see that with Moana's the same. They are very physical around their scrum. They like to try and push it back, and so we've been doing some work on that, just like we did with the Hurricanes, and I thought our forwards did well last week. The challenge for our forwards is to back that up now and come out and do the same thing this weekend against Moana.
Well, Burns' opposite number, former All Black Tana Umanga, has spent time in Apia recently, checking out the under-20 squads from Samoa and Tonga, who took part in the recent World Rugby Challenge. Moana lie in eighth place on the ladder right now, with three wins, already the most they have achieved in a Super Rugby season, but Umanga says they're far from satisfied.
It's a big game. The pride of the Pacific all coming together in Fiji, and we know that they'll be well supported. It's a big task for us to go over there and get the result we're looking for. Everyone's patting us on the back. You know, we've achieved something that hasn't been achieved by Moana in the past, but we haven't finished yet. We want more. And that's the kind of attitude we want. We want to always improve ourselves. We want to get better.
The Endura sit one place above Moana, but with the same number of points, that's 13. And Mick Burns says he's urging his players to be mindful about not conceding bonus points, which could be crucial at the end of the home and away season.
We are in the eight, so we've got to keep winning. And then there's bonus points and all that. This is the beauty of this competition we play in. If you get in front of a team that you're fighting for a finals position, you don't want to let them have a bonus point. There's all those things are at play. So that makes this game massively important for us. We're expecting another good crowd this weekend. And we know with our fans that they're loud and supportive, and the boys really appreciate every bit of noise they can bring.
And I'm sure there'll be plenty of noise come 2:05 in Suva tomorrow afternoon when that big match between the Endura and Moana kicks off. Meanwhile, in the 13-a-side game, the Kaibiti Silktails are finding the going very tough in the New South Wales Jersey Flag Cup competition. Up against the best young talent from the NRL, Wes Nangama's team are yet to record a win, but they came close last week, were leading early in the second half before going down 22-14 in the end to the Rabbitohs. In the Queensland Cup, after going down at home to the second place Redcliffe Dolphins last weekend, the PNG Hunters, they'll be on the Gold Coast tomorrow to play the third place Burley Bears in the annual Kokoda Cup encounter. Now, time to catch up on some of the stories making news headlines around the Pacific on this Friday morning. Keeping a close eye for us is Evan Wasuka. Evan, good morning.
Good morning, Richard.
So Fiji's Prime Minister, Sitiveli Rambuka, under fire, I think it's fair to say, for reappointing Asari Randrandro as the Education Minister just 3 months after he sacked him.
Yes, Richard. Lots of political drama playing out there in Suva. Asari Randrandro had been given the boot 3 months ago for disobeying the Prime Minister for insubordination. Now he's back, but Mr. Randrandro has been under the spotlight recently because of that alleged sex scandal involving a fellow cabinet minister. But what has happened over the past 3 months is that Mr. Randrandro has now become the leader of SODELPA, which is the third coalition party member. So now he's back in the education portfolio. And Mr. Rambuka has been criticized by former Fiji Prime Minister Mahendra Chaudhry. Now, Fiji Broadcasting Corporation is reporting that Mr. Chaudhry has said that this reappointment comes only because Mr. Rambuka needs the support of SODELPA to continue. And he's accusing the Prime Minister of trying to fool the people of Fiji because Mr. Rambuka had said that he had only sacked Mr. Randrandro for just a three-month period. Now that it's up, Asari Randrandro is back as the education minister. So, yeah, lots of drama out of Suva, Richard.
Yes, so I suppose when it comes to propping up a government, sometimes actions have to be taken, whether people like it or not. In Solomon Islands, all eyes on who will be the next prime minister and which group or groups, I guess, will form government. But the central bank, they say attention should instead be focused on the economy. That doesn't sound good.
Yes, so the governor of the central bank, Luke Farrow, he launched the 2023 annual report earlier this week, and he says the economy is in a precarious situation. The governor says the country is now at a crossroads and urgent economic reform is needed. He says whichever group comes into power, the new government must urgently put reforms into place, and that economic growth must be faster than the population growth. So a big call of action there from the governor of the central bank. Meanwhile, there's still questions over who will get into the office for the next term in government. Lobbying is continuing. Manasseh Sogavare, our party, is has 15 members right now. They need 26 to get to majority, and there's strong opposition from Matthew Wallace's Care Coalition and Peter Ken Laurier's United Party. But we still don't know what's happening there in terms of lobbying and who'll get there.
And although there are parties involved, no MP is, as it were, bound to any individual party currently. So if they choose to jump ship, they can.
Well, there's actually a Political Party Integrity Act that you have to stay within your party grouping, but people can resign from parties and move around. But the big thing, Richard, is that there's a whole bunch of independents who have no affiliation, and they're the ones that will be likely be the kingmakers as they shift around depending on what incentives are out there and what's attracting them to join the different groups.
Patience is required, as is always the case in Solomon Islands elections. Now, a bit of sports news to end. The Fiji Rugby Union, they've come back and responded to an allegation, a complaint that the men's Fiji Sevens team were forced to sleep in the terminal at Sydney Airport on their way to Dubai earlier in the season. What have the FRU said about this?
Yeah, so this complaint came by way of the Speaker of Parliament in a letter to the Prime Minister, outlining concerns that the Fiji Sevens team had slept in the corridors of the Sydney terminal while on their way to Dubai Sevens. Now, the FRU say they've investigated the matter, and it wasn't the whole team that slept in the corridors, just the head coach and the assistant coach. The FRU say that actually the whole team arrived around 9:40 p.m. at night, and then they had a early travel the next morning around 3 a.m. But because of the amount of equipment they had, that the head coach and the assistant coach stayed at the airport to watch over the equipment while the rest of the team headed off to the Sydney Airport Hotel and slept the night. They later rejoined the head coach and the assistant coach to check in for the flight the next day. The FRU says those social media posts were inaccurate and misleading, and that they, the FRU, have the welfare of the national team at heart, and it's paramount that the teams are looked after.
Okay, yeah, Fiji, Samoa, Tonga, boy, they put in the flying hours going to these tournaments around the world. It's pretty tough. So to be honest, if something like that had happened, it wouldn't be so surprising. But the FRU saying, in essence, of the story that's been on social media is not quite accurate. Evan, thanks very much indeed.
Thank you, Richard.
Evan Wasuka there with some of the news stories making headlines around the Pacific on this Friday morning.
Kick off your Sunday with Kuntamari Crofts on Pacific Sundays, right here on ABC Radio Australia. Pacific Sundays is a laid-back weekly wrap of all things Pacific, from news, sport, and entertainment to the best island music vibes. So whether you're chilling out, heading off to church, or catching up with family, be entertained as you do it with Pacific Sundays. Every Sunday at 6 a.m. PNG time on ABC Radio Australia.
With the Friday morning sporting edition of Pacific Beats here on ABC Radio Australia, I'm Richard Hewitt, and soccer in Micronesia is building to be the mouse that roared, with Nauru keen to field an international team before the end of the year, and American Samoa out to write the next chapter of their story, as featured in the documentary Next Goal Wins, and now the movie with the same name. And in Marshall Islands, they are making step-by-step progress as they look to shed the title of the last nation on earth without an international team. At the helm is their English technical advisor, Lloyd Hours, who made his first visit to the Marshalls a few months ago. And more recently, it was in the U.S. state of Arkansas, home to many expat Marshallese on the lookout for talent. So how are things going now, and how close is the fledgling football fraternity in the Marshalls to achieving their dream? Lloyd Hours joins us on the line from the UK. Lloyd, good evening to you over there. Thanks very much indeed for joining us on Pacific Beat.
No, thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
So how are things going? I gather it's getting a little sticky at the moment because of that old problem in sport finance.
Yeah, it's always the same one. It's an ongoing situation, but we're fortunate that we are supported quite well in terms of the interest behind it, and people do still want to reach out. It's just a case of wanting to find those ones that can help us reach it even further.
Now, we were talking on the program last week to Dave Jones, a fellow Englishman and the new coach of the American Samoan team, and he was telling us that there is a chance that they could play Marshall Islands later in the year if things go to plan. That's the hope. It could be them, it could be Nauru, it could be both.
Yeah, I was actually speaking to Dave about it, and obviously the success that he's had with American Samoa, especially the under-19s tournament recently. Definitely plans there. It's same again, actually, we're just coming back to that finance aspect of making it happen. But yeah, there's definitely interest in around making something happen with them. Whether that was a three-way tournament with Nauru as well, or whether it was just a one-off standalone fixture. But yeah, definitely plans that we would like to explore in the future with it.
And bigger plans to form essentially a Micronesian football union, as it were, bringing in all the teams from around the region, and Kiribati and Tuvalu would also be included, Federated States of Micronesia. All in all, regardless of the obstacles, I mean, what this tells me is that there's a real movement now in Micronesia to give these little countries a chance to contribute to the world of football in a bigger way than perhaps they have in the past.
Definitely. I think the original goal when we started in January 23 was to just see what we could do on the platform for the Marshall Islands, and then hopefully that would inspire other regions to take an interest in doing the same thing. And what that then does is obviously creates more of a pool of players for everyone, but also more awareness around the world for those nations, but also then more fixture opportunities. And yeah, like you said, the Micronesian Football Union is forming. It's, I believe, Nauru, Kiribati, FSM, Marshall Islands, and one more. I think actually Tuvalu could be the one. But yeah, we've just got plans for fixtures. We're talking about futsal opportunities for every nation in a tournament. And hopefully just that united front can hope to grow the game even further.
Now, key to success in the Marshalls, clearly finance very important, but also you need players. And you've been in Arkansas quite recently. I mean, what did you find in Arkansas? Did you find some talent there? I believe that was the case, wasn't it?
It was, yeah. So we knew it was happening. It was obviously a massive thing for us to be able to go there because of the amount of Marshallese around the area in general. We were fortunate enough to connect with Marshallese people from around the states in general. And some of them were female players who were playing high school, college, have played college previously. And what we ended up doing was having a women's camp based there. So we had a women's national futsal camp based in Arkansas. We had open sessions for men to attend at their side of it as well. And then we also held consulate meetings to help to discover how we could help grow the game in the area for Marshallese specific sessions. What that looks like, we're still to work out, but the aim is to get more kids playing in schools and in club settings that are Marshallese only. But yeah, we did really, really well in terms of finding more players. It spiraled onto more awareness since then, in terms of, especially on the female side. And that's something we want to explore as well, a female fixture for those girls that we managed to get to the first camp.
So, in terms of what's happening back in the Marshalls, I mean, when you went over there last year, I mean, you're really starting from the ground up. I mean, are there leagues starting to form? Are there regular training sessions happening? And if so, what sort of players are involved?
So I think last time we spoke, I can't remember if it was before or after the visit. I know that when we went out into that visit, it was, like you said, zero activity starting from the ground up. We now have 3 kids sessions per week, 3 adult sessions per week. We have activity in schools. We also have the coaches that undertook the coach education courses and now delivering sessions. And in January this year, we held the RATAC Cup, which is was the first official national futsal tournament. And that was for the adult section. And we also had a youth section as well for that. So we've got regular activity. We want to have it so that it's an annual activity in terms of the tournament. We would like to have more as it goes, so 2 or 3 per year. But after the Micronesian Games this June, we are then able to use the 11-a-side National Stadium for grass games as well, which obviously then leads to 11v11. So then the game starts to open out even more, specifically in Majuro.
Yeah, the sad thing is that the new stadium's been built, the Micronesian Games will be held, but football's not part of it.
No, I know. It's something that, to be honest, we were talking about the Micronesian Football Union, and it's something that they were campaigning for, even if it was futsal, but campaigning to get some variation of the sport onto the listings. But unfortunately, it's not going to be done this time, but it is something that they're pushing for the next one.
And from your point of view, do you have plans to visit the Marshall Islands again quite soon? Because it must be quite difficult doing what you're doing as technical advisor, but doing it from long range.
It sounds like it would be more difficult than it is in terms of the logistics of it. I think for us, it's great that we've we've got a committed group that are doing it. We're really fortunate that there is a guy that's now one of the PE teachers working in the schools who has a football background. He's then delivering on kids sessions, adult sessions, and he's actually overseeing those and been a massive part of it. So speaking to him quite regularly has been a massive help. But also the fact now that all the sessions are based out of one, the same venue, whenever, regardless of when the sessions are, is also a logistical help as well. So it's actually not as difficult as it is. Yep, there are plans, obviously, to, you know, for someone to go back out. Justin, who's part of our sort of English trio that's running it, he was out in January. He oversaw the running of the Ratak Cup futsal tournaments. But yeah, we have plans for more sort of visits and activity over the next few months anyway.
And if all goes well, then it's Hawaii in August, isn't it? And that's the plan, to have American Samoa, Nauru and yourselves.
That's the plan, yeah. So watch this space for that one.
It'll attract a lot of attention. I mean, the Marshall Islands story has gone around the world. American Samoa story has gone around the world. And Nauru's story is gaining traction. So get the three of you in Hawaii. You're guaranteed headlines, I think.
Exactly that. Yeah, you just got to keep pushing it. And hopefully we get some people interested in helping to make sure it can happen from that. Because Nauru are in a similar situation to us in terms of the awareness and the logistical issues of the financing from it. So hopefully it does, like you said, spark an interest for people, because it could be really, really good.
I think it would be fascinating. And I mean, there are so many football aficionados around the world who just love the story of the Minnow Nations, as they call them. So yeah, they'll be watching with keen interest, I have no doubt. But Lloyd, thank you so much for joining us on the program once again. We'll follow the project with interest, and who knows, we might all meet up in Hawaii in August.
Amazing, sounds good.
Okay, thank you, Lloyd. Lloyd Ours, technical advisor based over there in the UK to the Marshall Islands football setup, looking to get that thing off the back, really, isn't it? The monkey off the back that they're the last nation in the world without a full international team. I think Nauru could also lay claim to that, but in the end, who cares if they both get to play in August with American Samoa involved? Yes, there will be a lot of international interest. The little mouse that roared, or in this case, the little mice. Now, money continues to flow into Pacific sport from the Australian government, with Australian Rules Football the latest beneficiary. The government in Canberra has signed off on a four-year partnership with the AFL, which is designed to enhance high-performance pathways for aspiring Aussie rules players from across the Pacific. Funded through the Pacific Oz Sports Program, the new partnership will provide an equal number of programs for women and men. It will include the launch of a new AFL Talent Academy in Vanuatu, building on the existing network in Nauru, Fiji and Papua New Guinea. Right now, the PNG Academy is celebrating another big success, with Alan Savara selected to play for the Gold Coast Suns Academy team at the National Under-16 Boys Championship starting in May. Along with Rocky Rex and Ellison Tonner, Alan was one of three PNG players to spend time at the Suns recently, but National Talent Manager Prudence Sindrawen says Savara was the one who shone the brightest, and she says she has more reasons than one to follow the lead of the Suns. Ace Oya, who was the first player to come through the development pathway in PNG and make it all the way to the AFL.
He was supposed to travel last year with the other tours, but due to his documentation, he couldn't make the team. He was very sad. But September that he first traveled for under-14s to Sunny Coast. And then when he got back and then did the South Pacific tour, and after the South Pacific was the Suns and, yeah, these things. So it was something very big for him. He was really surprised as well. All he could say was he was just thanking us, and we were just there to guide you and support you all the way. But it's through your dedication as an individual that put out everything that made you got where you got to be today. So he was really happy.
So tell me, the National Under 16 Boys Championships come up in May and June, so a couple of months away. What happens for Alan between now and then?
He's already in PNG, so he'll be undertaking some programs at our high performance programs and all that, going to see physios and undergoing some trainings here. So we encourage him to play more, play and just keep fit, eat proper food and all that, just stay healthy, look after his body until he gets back in a few weeks' time, maybe 3 or 4 weeks' time, he'll be back in Gold Coast.
And what about Rocky and Ellison? How did they go?
They were good, but unsuccessfully, they haven't got selected, but they performed really well. But maybe Alan stood out for the coaches and everybody in Gold Coast. So he was the best among the three. So that's where he got selected. But Alison and Rocky did well as well. So hopefully we keep on engaging them with the program and all that. Yeah, something later might come up. So
tell me a little bit more about Alan. What kind of player is he?
He's a small forward. But most of the time, there's a different category that he plays back here. So he plays with our school competition, and then when he goes to his club level game, he plays as a reserve. So he plays as a small forward, and then sometimes he plays mids. He's a strong midfielder.
And I presume, obviously, he would have taken some inspiration from Ace, would he? Ace Oya, getting through to play for the first team at the Gold Coast Suns. Is that the case now that everybody wants to follow Ace?
Alan came from the same place, same environment, same place where Ace got out from, the small place called Gordons. This is where Alan is from as well. So that's where everything they do, they wanted to become like Ace. And it just happened that Alan is one of Ace's nephews.
Oh, right. Okay. So there's a family connection.
Yes. So it's just the small place that they all grew up together and all that. So seeing Ace playing with the Gold Coast Suns is just something big for the kids in the same place that they all grew up in. So they all like it's just when they wake up in the morning, they wanted to hold the AFL ball. They wanted to become like Ace. They want to do those small styles and speckies and whatnot that Ace does in the game. So, yeah. It's like every day they're holding the football. Morning till night, they'll be playing, trying to be like Ace and all that. So it was very easy for us when they came into the program. It was very easy to identify their skills and all that because they were there already, being small, doing AFL and all that. Nothing else, but it was just AFL.
So we have the obvious success of Ace, and then hopefully Alan will follow a similar pathway, and we hope others will follow him. But the emphasis at the moment seems to be on the boys coming through the academy. What's happening with the girls? You're a former captain of the national side. I mean, what's been the impact on them?
Well, I will say the boys' competition have been running, as in running, but due to the current situation that has been happening in the country, and as we are in the heart of the country, like Port Moresby, there's a lot of everything. I'm sure you guys have seen the news and all that. So things have been happening. So parents have been holding back their kids and all that. So it's just very hard for us to engage with girls. But when the girls that comes over to the Oval, that's where we get the girls and just give them a game to play. Just give them a few hours to run and then just see whoever we can put them in the academy pathway. So we just see who's the best and we can do selections and all that. So it's just very hard with the background that we are living in right now.
And just a final point. I mean, I gather that the International Cup is returning later this year after a long break. Is that right? So how will that work?
So we have AFL running in different parts of Papua New Guinea. So there'll be selections, a group of people moving to the places that has AFL running. So they'll be doing selections. And I think I'm not really sure, but I hope they do a big championship where we all can come together in one region and then play in these selections. But I'm not really sure if it's going to happen.
We shall see. But plenty happening on the AFL front in PNG. And great to see Alan Savara there in the shake-up with the Gold Coast Suns Academy team in May, June for the national championship. Be good to see him be as successful as Ace Oya has been and end up playing in the AFL at the top level. That was the AFL PNG National Talent Manager and former captain of the PNG Flames, Prudence Sindrawen. Now, there have been some blowouts in international soccer matches around the Pacific over the years, but two in the recent OFC under-16 qualifying round really caught the eye. The event turned out to be a disaster for the team from Papua New Guinea, young men who you would think would be future national team reps in one of the region's stronger soccer-playing nations, but a 14-0 loss to arch-rival Solomon Islands and a 7-0 loss to Tonga, who we don't think had ever beaten a Melanesian side before, have rather set the alarm bells ringing about the state of football development in PNG. There is some optimism surrounding the men's national team, with confirmation that former A-League coach Warren Moon will continue to take charge of the Capels. But central defender Alvin Komolong, who captained the team until he was struck down with serious injury, is deeply concerned about the state of the grassroots game. Right now, he is working his way back to full fitness in the Queensland Premier League with the Lions, where Moon is the technical director. So, what did Komalong make of the disaster that befell the under-16s in Nukualofa?
Definitely shocked, but not surprised. The signs have been there that something like this was going to happen. 2 years ago, or a year ago, they didn't even travel. So the only reason why we're in this pre-qualifying tournament is because we missed the time to travel. The result was definitely shocking, but I wouldn't say I was surprised.
What does it tell you, though, about the state of soccer development in Papua New Guinea at the moment? Because these boys playing under 16 age group, they should be the future of the game in PNG.
Yeah, exactly. I can only reference my time coming up when we had school soccer programs and other junior pathways that we'd go to. There was more of an active effort for junior soccer, which I'm yet to see anyone really roll out any real programs for under-16s or age group level soccer, youth level soccer anywhere in the country. It's here and there done by some people, but it's really not enough to sustain what the national team requires.
And when you look at the top end, the women's team struggled in the Olympic qualifying tournament and didn't come out of that terribly well. And of course, the men's team played in this new FIFA series, a goalless draw against Sri Lanka, then a defeat 4-0 against the Central African Republic. The whole situation seems to be at a very, very low ebb.
Yeah, it does. It does seem to be that way. With the women, I can't really comment on that too much because I don't really know much what's going on in there. But it's sad to see them decline over the last few years. I'd say they have declined in terms of results and performances, bar the exception of the Pacific Games last year, which I thought they thoroughly deserved. With the couples, it's tough because you'd want to say that they're not doing well, but it is an improvement from last year. In season last year, they lost 10-0 to Malaysia, which is one of their worst ever defeats. And then to put out the performances they did this year, considering that there's no active league running at the moment, I'd take that. I'd take a 4-0 and I'd take a draw. Of course, we'd love to see goals, but that's just the reality of where we're at. And it doesn't help that there's no functioning league for the boys at the moment.
So what do you think is required to address some of the issues within the game? Does it need wholesale changes at the top, or maybe not something as drastic as that?
I think it's everyone's responsibility. I've been there back home for the last how many years, and you know, it gets to a point where people can either complain or they can go out and do something about it. Yes, at the top, people need to get their act together in order for people underneath to really be motivated. But at the same token, it's up to like member associations as well to really start running programs and getting themselves up there, because member associations themselves have been stagnant over the last few years, which haven't seen any real development coming from MA. So you can't really call out the top when, you know, yourself, you're not doing anything about it. That's a good place to start. And it really doesn't take much to start something. It just takes a passion for development, and with the right interest, kids will always be there to want to train and play. But I guess it's up to the adults to really effect that change. So I think a more responsible approach from everyone is required as well. But in saying that, yeah, the administration has to do better as well.
And looking ahead, we've got the IFC Championship for the men coming up a little later in the year, and then World Cup qualifying. And of course, there hasn't been an IFC Championship since back in 2016, when Papua New Guinea very nearly won the thing. You lost to New Zealand in the final only on penalties. So a lot has changed since then. Is this the opportunity really for PNG to try and put things right? And will you be involved yourself? You obviously haven't played for the national side for a while, primarily because of injury.
Yeah, look, I'm coming back into playing at the moment. I'm doing well here at Lions, so my hand is up for selection, and I believe in what Warren's doing with the team. I've had good conversations with him that outline his direction, and I believe that is the right direction that we should be going in. This tournament is a big opportunity for us to win back some pride and dignity. We need to be honest with where we're at, but I solely believe that we've got a good run on into this tournament, and with the plans in place and with Warren at the helm, I feel like we can really get some results there.
And as far as the future at the Lions is concerned, you'll be hopeful of making the first team quite soon now?
Yeah, definitely. I'm just looking to get stronger and sharper with each game. I'm not trying to set too many long-term targets, but I'm hoping to be in that first team mix very, very soon. But only my performances can dictate when I'll be in that starting lineup. I've been playing so far. I'm pretty happy with where I'm at and the trajectory I'm on. I'm pretty confident I'll be up there very soon.
Alvin Komalong, I'm sure the Capitals would be glad to have him back. He's on the way to full fitness, and we hope a return to the PNG national men's soccer team. As for building the youth system, that's going to take some work. That's it from this edition of Pacific Beat on this Friday morning PAC programme. Congratulations once again to Vanuatu's women's cricket team after their historic win over Zimbabwe in the World T20 qualifying match overnight. Let's hope they can repeat that in the matches to come over the next few days. I'm Richard Hewitt. Thanks for your company. Have a great sporting weekend.